information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
One show, 3+ years, dozens of interviews, hundreds of episodes, thousands of stories, tens of thousands of downloads, and hundreds of thousands of hits on the site known as MediaMonarchy.com. Welcome to the 150th episode. It's November 20th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, for all your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, the latest New World Next Week, terror trials, militia groups, and the swine flu, super plague, Obamasia, peace prizes, polls and policies, Fort Hood false flag part 3, police state international, geopolitics, war whores, econo crash, plus Portland pot and the West Virginia bird. All that and so much more, November 20th, 2009, the 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. Emergency Broadcast Network from their seminal 1995 album Telecommunication Breakdown. That's Station Identification. And why don't we do that? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, a huge welcome to new and returning listeners. This is the 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. I kind of can't believe it myself. It's November 20th, 2009. Like I said, my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Broadcasting live, as always, as we have done from the very beginning, 3+ years ago, on the Portland Radio Authority. PRARadio.org, Friday mornings, 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And again, a huge thanks to all the folks here who make this happen and who bring it to you. Thanks to our good friends at ZeroPointRadio.com, broadcasting it live, 92.3 FM, 1500 AM in Casper, Wyoming, and again worldwide, ZeroPointRadio.com. It's 11 AM Mountain Time. You can hop on that page and get in the chat room. I'm in there. I'll be signed on to Instant Messenger as Media Monarchy, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org. All the ways you can get in touch. One p.m. on the East Coast right now. On the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. And also thanks to Free Radio Olympia, fromolympia.org. Ground Zero Radio out of Canton, Georgia, at stickam.com/groundzeroradio. 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, berkeleyliberationradio.net. 90.7 KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, thanks to oneskyradio.com. And my man Glenn from right here in Portland, Oregon, cascadiapublicradio.org. I believe our friends at Boulder Free Radio are bobbing and weaving, and we can all catch up with them on phantomradio.org. More on that later. I again want to remind you, thanks to my man Jeff at radio23.org, we now have a super high quality feed of Media Monarchy episodes. If you are an affiliate or replay the show on your web radio station, feeds.feedburner.com/MediaMonarchyHD get you the big, huge, nice files. And again, this 150th episode, I have to admit it snuck up on me. I, of course, had plans and schemes in the weeks before that I would do some big, amazing special. But here it is. Time wouldn't let me. So what you're going to get here is classic Media Monarchy. The most jam-packed news, politics, alternative news, political conspiracies and cover-ups that you're going to find any podcast / radio show out there. I stand by that claim. So again, new listeners, returning listeners, I thank you. You've made all this possible. We all share information and learn and grow and uncover. Essentially what we see not only going on in the dog and pony professional wrestling Hollywood sideshow, it's a shell game. It's a war on consciousness. We use the open source intelligence of the web while we can with all these tools to try and tell people what's up. We always glance at Google News while we're doing these live shows to see if anything breaks while we're live in the studio. Tamiflu-resistant swine flu spreads between patients. One is dead in a tour bus crash in the Miley Cyrus entourage. Ron Paul's Bittersweet Symphony. Hassan, Fort Hood, Patsy and a Drill Gone Live. The new president of the European Union. All these things we're going to cover on this 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. The way we're going to start it off with is the latest and seventh episode of my new weekly video series with James Corbett from CorbettReport.com. It's called The New World Next Week. I love doing it. I hope you guys enjoy these videos. They're essentially a boiled down version of some of the bigger covered or uncovered stories that both MediaMonarchy.com and CorbettReport.com go over. And it's a nice 10-minute version. I know folks out there aren't going to listen to a 2-hour podcast about news and politics, but a nice bite-sized 10-minute well-produced video. And again, huge thanks to CorbettReport.com. The latest episode, New World Next Week, for November 19th. We generally cover three big stories, and we note that the temperature is rising. We've talked about the acceleration of things. That in the past, a lot of these stories would be huge, monumental things that we would spend a lot of time discussing. Things are happening at such a rapid rate now. We just have to data mine and disseminate the information and hope folks are going to catch up and keep up. And like we always say, get active or get radioactive. The three stories we go over on this latest New World Next Week episode: the real reason only 5 detainees coming to New York City for the terror trials, 100 new militia groups since Obama elected, and the H1N1 super flu plague in the Ukraine. Those are the three stories we go over on this most recent New World Next Week with CorbettReport.com. The show is now not only on YouTube, but also on VeracityVideos.com. And I figured out a way you can get it onto your iPod. It worked for me. If you just put the feed address into your iTunes, feeds.feedburner.com/MediaMonarchy, you'll get all the MP3s and the MP4s. Put that same URL into your feed reader RSS subscription. You'll get all the headlines and all the videos and all the audio. It's so easy to do now. And I try, and again, not only with the information, but in the way it's presented, to make it easy and accessible. But the layers are there for you to peel back and for you to do your own homework and investigation. So I set the table with those three stories. So let's go over them in greater detail as well with their essential supplemental contextual links provided on MediaMonarchy.com. 9/11 updates, terror trials, truth and consequences. From HistoryCommons.org, the question: the real reason only 5 detainees are coming to New York? U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder recently announced that 5 detainees would be moved from Guantanamo to New York, where they'd stand trial for carrying out 9/11. However, 5 other detainees will continue to be tried before military commissions, which have lower standards of evidence. The 5 detainees coming to New York have previously indicated they intend to plead guilty, but the 5 to be tried before military commissions have not. The New York Five are, of course, the mastermind, KSM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, plus Ramzi bin al-Shib, Ali Abdul Aziz Ali, Mustafa al-Hawsawi, and Khalid bin Attash. They indicated their intention to plead guilty at a hearing in Guantanamo on December 8, 2008. According to a McClatchy article, the five, Holder says, will be tried before military commissions are Ibrahim al-Kosi, Omar Kadar, Abdul al-Rahim al-Nashiri, and also Ahmed al-Darbi. Many more links in there, and again, as we reference in New World next week, historycommons.org is such an invaluable resource. Doesn't make up your mind, it just gives you the reporting and the links and the context. All the related updates to these terror trials. First from ABC News, where they ask another question. What happens if a 9/11 terrorist defendant is found not guilty? Well, the update at the end of this will let us know. But we know the question, that question, is a false one, because they've already all intended to plead guilty. These guys have been beaten in submission. We've noted KSM, as he's bragging about all his attacks that he had something to do with. He even bragged about doing things that weren't possible because they weren't built by the time he was in jail. We're going to get more into patsies in a little bit. But the fear-mongering, again, brings back the phony left-right paradigm. And so much of this is all based on the blank check of 9/11, the official story of which can't possibly be true. Mukasey, former attorney general, former cover-up guy for WTC 93 bombing, all going down, of course, in the Southern District of Manhattan. Politico.com has Mukasey saying there's a very high risk of an attack if we bring these guys to New York for a trial. ComingAnarchy.com exclaims that we shouldn't execute Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. There's a New York Times book review on John Farmer's The Ground Truth. We've covered The Ground Truth. A great video, again, that's up on veracityvideos.com, Rethinking 9/11, Why Truth and Reconciliation Are Better Strategies Than War. Op-Ed News has an interesting piece on the memorials and symbologies, 9/11 monuments to the scene of the crime. And here's where we get to a little deeper. Obama says KSM will be convicted and executed. The French agency press, Obama, defending plans to try accused 9/11 author KSM in civilian court, predicted Wednesday that he would be convicted and executed. Holder, of course, said failure's not an option. But Obama, speaking to NBC during his Asian vacation, said, quote, when he's convicted and when the death penalty is applied to him. And when presidents, and he, of course, isn't the first, and this isn't the first time he's done it, did it the same way, I believe, even with Fort Hood, Hassan, when a president comes out and makes declarative statements about the guilt or innocence of someone, pretty much precludes a fair trial. When the leader of the free world says, you're going to be convicted and executed, and that's it. But we can't get into that right now. CIA paid millions of dollars to the ISI since 9/11. That's from the Times of India. Keene, former New Jersey governor Thomas Keene, former 9/11 commissioner, he also says, don't bring these guys to New York. An interesting note, from lawyer Jonathan Turley. There's a video up on Raw Replay where he notes that Obama crossed the line by predicting KSM death sentence. But the last couple of updates below the video here come from Newsweek and allgov.com. Just saw this a couple of hours ago, posted this morning, November 20th, 2009. Holder says 9/11 accused to remain in prison even if acquitted. Critics who blasted the Obama administration's decision to try 9/11 plotters in New York City courtroom need not worry about terrorists going free. Regardless of how the trial turns out, alleged mastermind KSM and his four co-conspirators aren't going anywhere outside of imprisonment. Attorney General Eric Holder apparently has told members of Congress that even if the jury were to find the accused not guilty, the Justice Department intends to keep them locked behind bars indefinitely as enemy combatants. Responding to questions from Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, Holder said, quote, "I certainly think that under the regime that we are contemplating, the potential for detaining people under the laws of war, we would retain that ability." It's heads I win, tails you lose. Joshua Dreidel, a New York criminal defense lawyer who worked on terrorism cases, told Newsweek, quote, "It does, unfortunately, ruin the effect of the notion that we're bringing them to federal court to uphold the rule of law. If you say, if the rule of law doesn't work, we'll try something else." So that answers that question we hit a few minutes ago. What happens if a 9/11 terrorist defendant is found not guilty? We know that's not going to happen, barring some amazing developments. Further fleshing out the three stories James Corbett and I cover on the most recent New World Next Week episode, our weekly video series, originally posted on youtube.com/CorbettReport. The second story, 100 new militia groups since Obama was elected. And as I note, again, we're back to the homegrown errorism of the 90s. I've told you time and time again, when the Rethuglicans are in, the enemy's somewhere over there. When the fake progressives come, the enemy's here. And we're back to the 90s heyday of McVeigh's and militias and Waco's and Columbines and Ruby Ridge and protests, and all that is coming back to the fore. As again, we've told you, they're just going to swivel around the Patriot Act police state apparatus and aim it squarely at us. So there's a lot of fear-mongering, hate speech, demonization going on in all of this, and we won't be able to fully flesh out all of this. But I think we've given you enough pieces over these 150 episodes of Media Monarchy that hopefully you can see through the facade. Mark Potok told CNN that the Southern Poverty Law Center has found 100 new militia groups since President Barack Obama was elected. CNN's Jim Acosta talked to members of one militia who are worried that Obama will take away their Second Amendment rights.
Since President Obama's election, legal experts have been tracking a huge increase, they say, in militia activity here in the U.S., with at least 100 new groups cropping up since January.
We spoke with one group, and while some members will not show their faces, they are not afraid to talk about their mistrust of the government. And they are even more suspicious of the president. Jim Acosta is with us live for part one of an AM original series, Patriots or Extremists. So do these groups have a right to form, first of all?
They absolutely do. Even their critics will admit that. And we did contact nearly a dozen different militia groups across the country, and only one, the Southeast Michigan Volunteer Militia, allowed us to take our cameras to one of its training exercises. Armed with a small arsenal of semi-automatic weapons, the militia's leaders say they are simply defending their rights. Once a month, in the woods, 30 miles outside the nearest city,
we're practicing target acquisition.
Members of the Southeast Michigan Volunteer Militia meet for training.
Is it getting bigger?
Oh, absolutely.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Training for what depends on who you ask. But this militia member, who didn't want to give his last name, worries the government will eventually take away his gun rights.
Well, anytime we get a Democratic president in the office, people become concerned, including myself, and we get a resurgence out here.
Others just don't like President Obama.
So you don't trust him?
In short, I think he could be dangerous for the nation.
Michael Lacamar sees the militia as a check against government overreach.
Just the simple fact that we are out here and we are doing this will give somebody pause, will make them think twice.
Because you're ready to defend your rights.
Ultimately, yes. Down is fire.
Right.
And they're prepared to teach anyone, even this reporter, how to fire a semi-automatic weapon like this Russian assault rifle.
There you go.
The members of this militia insist they are not enemies of the government. They say they just want to be prepared in case the government becomes the enemy.
The truth is that these groups are popping up like mushrooms after a spring rain.
Earlier this year, Mark Potok with the Southern Poverty Law Center put out a report warning of a surge in militia activity that came with the election of President Obama. Since that report was issued, Potok says his staff has counted 100 new militia groups across the country.
There really is this kind of terrible fear mixed with fury about the idea that President Obama is somehow leading a kind of socialistic takeover of America.
This is not an Obama-centered organization.
So we put this across his wound.
But militia leader Lee Miracle says his group is different, teaching survival skills that might be needed after a natural disaster.
Two at one, put your rifle back down.
As a military veteran who's now a postal worker, Miracle urges respect for the president.
As a postal worker, that's my boss. He's not going to away mess with my boss, but
he's your boss.
He's my boss, yeah. He's my boss. He should come out and have some barbecue with us.
If he did, he'd find a movement that's not just gaining new members.
How many of you are new to the militia?
It's getting more worried.
But how many of you are worried about the Constitution right now?
Yeah.
Worried as in the sense that it's not being
followed. It's going away.
Yeah. Besides the Second Amendment, those militia members could not specify which of their constitutional rights are being peeled away. And the Obama administration, we should mention, has not proposed any new gun control measures. It is unclear just how closely militias are being watched by federal authorities. The FBI and ATF both declined our requests for interviews. Johnny Karen.
And when you take a look at least the group you profiled there, there's no win and there's
right.
No minority.
Well, there's
so
one woman there.
There's one woman. Okay,
yeah.
One woman and no minority. Yeah. So who are the people joining these groups?
And I should mention more than just one woman. There was a 13-year-old daughter there, and there's a reason why I mentioned that. The gentleman that you saw towards the end of that piece, Lee Miracle, the leader of that militia, we're going to go home with him and his family to figure out just who is joining these militias, who are these folks. He includes his children in these activities, including his 13-year-old daughter, who is firing a shotgun, I should mention, better than myself out there on Militia Day.
You want to bet.
And we'll have more of that tomorrow.
All right. Is it all about gun rights then?
A lot of it is about gun rights. A lot of it is about distrust. They just don't trust this president. They think he is out to peel back rights, and the gun issue
exactly
is their
which
big
ones
one.
Other than gun rights,
they do not. And we should mention that the gun control issue specifically is really unrealistic in many ways, because the Obama administration knows and Democrats know that it would be political suicide for them to go after gun control measures. In fact, the Attorney General has indicated just recently that he's not even going to go back to the assault weapons ban that was enacted during the Clinton administration.
So for that in the Senate,
exactly.
It is interesting that one of the guys in your piece said we're doing this perhaps so that we're a deterrent,
exactly.
to having anything happen.
They want to give people pause.
I don't know what part that was of their series about homegrown errorism, but there's a lot to break down in there, and we don't really have time to do it all. I don't think that all this is that it's so new. It's just now you're paying attention to this again. We've been attacking the puppets as they've switched sides over the last several years, whether it was Clinton or whether it was Bush 2 or whether it's Obama now. It takes two crooked wings to fly this bird. The two-party system props itself up and we shift back and forth. We'll selectively enforce or pay attention to one thing while the winds are blowing, and then kind of switch and do the other when you throw those bums out, but the agenda moves forward. So there's a lot to break through in the box and in the trap
of the left-right dichotomy. A few updates on this. First, from HelenAir.com, Montana, seeing new rise in anti-government and hate groups. Another segment, and I guess that's probably another part of this CNN series, CNN propaganda segment on the Oath Keepers, also goes out of its way to demonize the recent documentary Fall of the Republic. That's, of course, directed by Alex Jones of InfoWars.com. So we'll close out this militia posting with a note from TruthNews.us. The ADL's three extremist conspiracy theories, but with some context and evidence. So we've got the ADL, Anti-Defamation League's hit piece. We've got the SPLC, again, all demonizing the current enemy, essentially. The Anti-Defamation League has published a fresh report directly targeting Alex Jones as an extremist and the king of conspiracy, lumping in the info contained on this website with the actions of racists and white supremacists. There's one problem with the report. It's low on empirical facts and based entirely on the group's desire to create the impression that huge swaths of politically disgruntled Americans are violent, conspiratorial-minded bigots that they must expose and counter. With conspiracy talk show host Alex Jones leading the way, one of the most disturbing trends in 2009 has been the resurrection and proliferation of some of the same anti-government conspiracy theories that so riled up domestic extremists in the 1990s, the ADL writes. You see the shift back and forth? The people they're demonizing here were exposing the puppetry of Bush 2, the fraud of the War of Terror, the lies of 9/11, all of it. Still doing it now, but they've shifted puppets. Basically, this ADL piece tries to debunk the imposition of martial law, gun confiscations, and FEMA camps. The rest of this piece from Steve Watson on TruthNews.us basically gives you the facts and the documents and the links to pretty much prove that all three of those things exist and are moving forward rapidly. Civilian inmate labor program, gun confiscations that we at least saw at Katrina, National Emergency Centers Act, Rex 84, on and on and on. ...100 new militia groups since Obama elected. That was the second story that we went over on the latest New World Next Week with CorbettReport.com. The third is not one story. It's a massive swath of interconnected biological warfare updates. Biowars and swine flu, outbreak of the super flu plague. We start this off with a quick mention and the top of an article from Dr. Rebecca Carley. A tale of two stories. European biowar outbreak and the censoring of it by mainstream media. The biggest story on the planet today is the outbreak of a very serious advanced biological war virus in Europe. The second biggest story on the planet is the suppression of that story for almost 2+ weeks now by the corporate-owned mainstream news media. We'll make a quick mention of our two most recent swine flu update posts, Resistant Strains or Strained Resistance, and Strange Ukraine, and the scarcity claims. That's going back 2+ weeks when we started to track the situation in the Ukraine. So let's get another piece from express.co.uk. Million hit by plague worse than swine flu. A deadly plague could sweep across Europe, doctors fear, after an outbreak of a virus in Ukraine plunged the country and its neighbors into a state of panic. A cocktail of three viruses are reported to have mutated into a single pneumonic plague, which is believed may be far more dangerous than swine flu. The death toll has reached 189, and more than a million people have been infected, most of them within the nine regions of western Ukraine. President of the Ukraine, the Orange Revolution, Viktor Yushchenko, has called in the World Health Organization and a team of nine specialists carrying out tests in Kiev and Lviv to identify the virus. Samples have been sent out to London for analysis. President Yushchenko said, quote, "People are dying. The epidemic is killing doctors. This is absolutely inconceivable in the 21st century." What this ties into, what we have covered in small and great detail over the last several months as we've covered the swine flu outbreak. What we see going on now ties in with a company known as Baxter Pharmaceutical Company. They've sent out tainted samples before, tainted vaccines, and have been caught. A couple of months ago, we've noted dual citizen, U.S.-Israeli citizen, a guy named Joseph Moshe, M-O-S-H-E, supposedly made a call into an L.A. radio station warning that Baxter and their lab in the Ukraine was releasing a biological warfare agent. After this radio phone call, which again, I've still never actually heard, so, unfortunately, there is a bit of speculation in this. However, you may remember the story of the guy getting SWAT teamed in L.A. and surviving rounds of tear gas and the robots. It was this bizarre standoff where they finally just dragged him from his car. He warned 2 months ago of a biological terror event in the Ukraine to be caused by biolabs of Baxter. That's what we're talking about. More from Gather.com. H1N1 super flu plague in the Ukraine and .. Dvorak.org. Swine flu, one killer virus, three key questions. FarmWars.info goes over reports of aerosol spraying as well as the weaponized viruses and Baxter and the Ukraine. And UkrainePlague.blogspot.com has more low-fly spraying reports. And this super plague symptoms now showing up in Poland. Again, unfortunately, with a bit of this, we have to speculate. And I don't like doing that. But sometimes you have to a little bit. And we have enough crumbs and leads and also hard bits of evidence, contextual evidence, that make us look at this swine flu and strange Ukraine situation. Another unconfirmed bit, but perhaps too salacious to pass by. From a website out of Africa, fto.co.za. I'm not actually sure if that's Zaire or Zimbabwe. fto.co.za, unconfirmed report that Obama has shares in Baxter. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, has shares in Baxter, the company many say is responsible for the H1N1 swine flu pandemic. Back in 2005, Obama bought $50,000 worth of stock in two companies. Right after he bought the shares, also in 2005, Obama, still a senator at the time, introduced the first comprehensive bill to address the threat of avian influenza pandemic, the Avian Act, Senate Bill 969, with a link to govtrack.us for you to check out this bill for yourself. That makes it even more interesting that over $60 million was awarded for a vaccine against the bird flu in 2007 that at the time did not mutate until afterwards. This guy sure knows his planning. I guess that's change you can believe in from investor to president. Again, that's unconfirmed report from FTO.co.za that Obama actually has shares in Baxter Pharmaceuticals. Being implicated by folks in the Ukraine and the question-filled whistleblower Joseph Moshe about Baxter's bioweapon lab in the Ukraine. But let's get a clip, another great bit from Russia Today and Wayne Madsen asking if it's a plague or a plan, as they note that the Ukraine's mystery disease shows burned out lungs.
The mutant flu virus, which has sent waves of panic throughout western Ukraine, continues its seemingly unstoppable march. Only the fevered speculation of where it came from is spreading faster than the illness. Igor Ogrodnev reports tonight from western Ukraine.
1.5 million have been infected. Tens of thousands more fall ill every day. More than 300 people, many of them with no previous health problems, are dead.
There is high population density and internal migration in the Ukraine, and this creates a greater risk for our country.
But the rapid spread of disease has given rise to rumors, finger pointing, and conspiracy theories. Doctors in western Ukraine have told of postmortems where the lungs of the victims were said to be as black as charcoal, comparing the symptoms to the Spanish flu, which wiped out millions in 1918. Others even believe a pneumonic plague is to blame for the high death toll. Another theory causing a frenzy on the internet links the outbreak to deliberate mass spraying of chemicals by planes over Kiev. Local newspapers reported hundreds of eyewitness accounts suggesting this. And then there are those who claim the epidemic was engineered by pharmaceutical companies.
When you look at what's happening in Ukraine, and the fact is that this may be a mutation of H1N1, autopsies being performed are showing that the victim's lungs are pitch black. The research in H1N1, we can trace it back to basically, it should be called the Jurassic flu. The DNA of a woman who died of the 1918 Spanish flu, the 1918 pandemic, was recovered from her corpse. The DNA was used to recreate this virus.
The World Health Organization denies that this is anything but ordinary swine flu, but warns that the situation remains critical.
This is a virus which everyone is susceptible to, and we don't know in whom it will cause severe disease and in whom it might just cause mild disease. So everyone needs to take a precaution against the disease.
The government response has come under attack. No vaccinations were given before the outbreak, and critics say not enough Tamiflu was stockpiled. Now the antiviral drugs have arrived, but there are uncertainties about who's being given access to them. People in the streets say that ahead of the presidential election, politicians have used the crisis to boost their profile or shoot down their rivals.
There's one piece of advice for the government. Stop confusing the population.
Meanwhile, in western Ukraine, whole hospitals have been converted into emergency wards. Stefania Petkovich began to feel unwell one day 2 weeks ago. Soon she could barely breathe and had a temperature of almost 40.
I was nearly dead when I was delivered here. They put me on drip and I don't even remember what happened afterwards.
Authorities say infection rates have stabilized for the moment, despite what the rumormongers say. And the streets are full again.
Here in Lviv, people are acting as if the threat has receded. Unlike a few weeks ago, hardly anyone is wearing protective masks. But the scope of the swine flu problem remains astonishing.
Officials say familiarity with virus precautions is breeding complacency and warn that new waves of disease are imminent.
Have you heard anything about this in the mainstream media? I find this really disturbing. I even just glanced, you know, again at Google News and the mainstream websites on what they're covering right now on this Friday, November 20th morning in 2009. Nothing about the situation in the Ukraine. And we have more and more updates. An interesting graph on the swine flu mortality rate over essentially the last 300 days of swine flu. But then the headlines. French woman gets crippling illness after H1N1 vaccine. Swine flu causes surge of garlic sales in Serbia. That's from the Associated Press. Leading Croatian priest says don't get the H1N1 vaccine. That's from MacedoniaOnline.eu. Ontario's deadly swine surge, 24 dead in 72 hours. That as well, swine flu kills 38 more in Canada. Toll nationally for Canada, at least at this posting, over 200. Both those from Vancouverite.com. PreventDisease.com mentions that low vitamin D levels linked to the proliferation of H1N1. NaturalNews.com goes into swine flu deception and disinformation exposed. I'm not even sure how to wrap my head around what to think about what we're seeing in this bio war. We know the Pentagon's talked about race-specific bioweapons. We know they've created many things in labs that somehow managed to escape during a drill or an exercise, or a lone nut sends them out. But we also have all the other bio-war updates. Plastic chemicals feminize boys. That's from the BBC. Again, you want to talk about carbon footprint. I'll put my carbon footprint in your ass till you start talking about all the other environmental problems. GMOs, poison water, the war machine, the biggest polluter. There's a new film called Crude. And I believe it just completed its only one-week run here in Portland at Cinema 21. But I hopefully still get a chance to see it. There's an article that goes along with this that ties in with this new film, Crude, by Joe Berlinger, director of Brother's Keeper and Paradise Lost. Amazonians sue Chevron over toxic waste from the Sydney Morning Herald. Hopefully, around the holidays, you're going to be able to talk to someone from AmazonWatch.org about those issues, as well as the new documentary, Crude. DNA testing firm bankrupt, and threat level asks the question, who gets the data? Again, Natural News going into the FDA, how they openly allow criminally convicted doctors and researchers to keep working on pharmaceutical and clinical trials. The Hothouse Effect author, Dr. Barton Kunstler, says that biolabs are multiplying like rabbits and calls it a clear and present danger. We have echoed those sentiments on MediaMonarchy.com for a long time. An interesting note from Tox Talk, the Our Toxic Times blog from the newsletter, Where Not to Live, over the recent story of America's healthiest states. And I believe my home state of West Virginia, of which we'll have a little bit on at the very end of this episode, kind of going home, the country roads. I believe West Virginia ranks number 42 on the list. Take that, Alabama! But fortunately, I think my current state of Oregon is number 13 or so on the list. Where not to live. Another note, as far as the drills and the biolabs and the biological warfare, Interpol bioterror drill. We noted it recently. Mike Chambers on MikeChambersLive.com has a new article about the coincidences or business as usual of the Interpol bioterror drill. Interpol being, of course, UK, Black Ops, not on the front, of course. And now we have this massive biological warfare outbreak. This all, of course, reminds me, we heard Emergency Broadcast Network at the start of the show. That record's been hugely influential on me. All of this starts to remind me even more of another hugely influential band on me, the Dead Kennedys. And their track Chemical Warfare, of course, from their first record, I guess from 79, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Where even the first line notes down at the arsenal where they keep the nerve gases, guarded day and night by caged white rabbits. I wanted to find a clip to embed of Dead Kennedys doing Chemical Warfare to put in this BioWars Swine Flu updates post. And I found a live clip, interestingly enough, while I was doing this yesterday, a live clip of the Dead Kennedys doing Chemical Warfare in Portland, Oregon, exactly 30 years ago yesterday. November 19th, 1979. That was an interesting bit of synchronicity. So that video is there for you. Again, we're not going to have time to play Chemical Warfare for you, but you should know it. The last few Enviro health updates. We're going to hit a little bit of the health scare bill and our man Al Gore and the carbon taxes and a little bit of good news. But first, from the New York Times, in the House, many spoke with one voice on the health care bill. And what was that one voice? Lobbyists. DailyPaul.com points out the interesting note in the healthcare bill that it makes a reference to something being implantable. Is microchipping included in the healthcare bill? Buried deep within the 1,000-plus pages of the massive U.S. healthcare bill, a non-discussed section titled Subtitle C-11, Section 2521, National Medical Device Registry, which states its purpose as, quote, the Secretary shall establish a National Medical Device Registry to facilitate analysis of post-market safety and outcomes data on each device that A, is or has been used in or on a patient, and B, is a Class 3 device or a Class 2 device that is implantable. In real-world speak, according to this report, the new law then, when fully implemented, provides the framework for making the U.S. the first nation in the world to require each and every one of its citizens to have an implanted in them an RFID chip for the purpose of controlling who is or isn't allowed medical care in their country. Global warming is not our fault, says most voters in the Times Online poll out of the U.K., interestingly enough, gas bag from the fake conservatives, Rush Limbaugh, mentions a PrisonPlanet.com article on Al Gore. That article is, with hurricanes at 30-year low, Gore turns to Photoshop, changing his slideshow, getting rid of the catastrophic hurricanes because there haven't been really many. We, of course, noted in the B-side previous to this, episode 150, that Al Gore, His Highness, was in Portland yesterday and the day before, pimping his new book for all the people who can't wait to pay a carbon tax to multinational, inbred, oligarch elites who are turning it around and making mankind the enemy. You're the enemy, you're the dirty one, you're the one who makes everything bad. Even though they're the ones that have forced us to use their toxic materials, shelved better plans, electric cars and whatnot. Can't use hemp for anything. But we're the dirty ones and we're the bad ones, and folks still, unfortunately, line up and love it. While they're cranking out their hope babies, they're going to be the first people to say that other people should have a child limit. Not me, because I'm healthy and liberal and white, but, you know, those other dirtier, dumber, browner people. And we do that abroad with all the foundation funding and the vaccines from the Gates and all those foundations. Eugenics, essentially. So Al Gore was here yesterday. He also spoke to a big supercomputing convention, trying to get all those private, military, environmental, industrial complex contractors to get on board the new smart grid and the cyberspace war. It's all going to be connected. Future combat systems, indeed. Copenhagen climate change talks stall as CO2 emissions rise. That's from the Christian Science Monitor. And we end this BioWars swine flu outbreak of the superflu plague post on MediaMonarchy.com with one good note. The HPV shot requirement has been dropped for immigrant girls. This from the Wall Street Journal. Immigrant girls and women will no longer have to be vaccinated against a sexually transmitted virus to get their green cards. Starting December 14th, the human papillomavirus will no longer be on the list of immunizations immigrant females ages 11 to 26 must receive before becoming legal permanent residents. Of course, our good friends Merck and their Gardasil being forced on young girls all around the country. Of course, many cases of tragic reactions. Soft kill. Soft kill eugenics. Remember their slogan, the tagline, one less? You could be one less. So that wraps up the BioWars. That being the third story that we covered in the most recent New World Next Week episode of CorbettReport.com. The 9/11 terror trials, Obama militia, and the strange Ukraine swine flu outbreak. This leads us in to a quick mention of all the other latest work from CorbettReport.com. Episode 108, Peace Prizes for Warmongers. Why did Obama win the Nobel Peace Prize? Because he's the golden boy of world politics? Because he's the Nobel Committee, because they love warmongers? Was it an expression of hope? Episode 108, Peace Prizes for Warmongers, delves into the Nobel's history and the deeper meaning of peace. You should check out the history of who's been nominated and awarded the Nobel Prize, and you'll see that it's not that good, to say the least. A related video asking, is Obama a man of peace? And the supplemental article, Who's Afraid of Hiroshima? Of course, Obama, like every other U.S. president, change be damned, declined to visit the Hiroshima Memorial. Wouldn't that be such an easy thing to do, to show the world that you really are the change agent they think you are? Is just make a quick visit to Hiroshima? And they can't even do that. The other latest thing is Corbett Report's other weekly video series, Economics 101. We've noted he's talked to everybody from Gerald Celente, folks from Shadow Stats, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, Michelle Chosadovsky, G. Edward Griffin. This latest edition talks to Paul Grignon of digitalcoin.info, all about alternative money. So that's everything coming from what I think makes a pretty powerful independent partnership between MediaMonarchy.com and CorbettReport.com. We're both one-man shows trying to spread information. The more we help out, many hands make light work. And if you can help us spread the information, again, we'll all hopefully be better informed and more empowered to make better decisions about our lives. And on that note, we're now into hour number two of the 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, my friends. I'm so thankful that I've been able to do this and that so many folks out there are digging it. It's November 20th, 2009, and we're coming to you live, as always, from the home base of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, kicking it out 92.3 FM and 1500 AM in Casper, Wyoming, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, StickAM.com/GroundZeroRadio, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and PhantomRadio.org. Still so much to go over on this second hour of episode 150. We're going to hit some Portland pot, West Virginia's bird, and all the econocrash, war whores, geopolitics, police state, Fort Hood updates. But first, you know him. You love him. You got tricked by a slick advertising campaign. That's right. It's the latest Obamasiah updates. Polls, policies, and the bow debate. We first note from the French agency Press that Obama's popularity has fallen below 50% for the first time. Obama's job approval rating has dipped below 50% nationally for the first time as Americans worry about the war in Afghanistan, a new poll released Wednesday found. The Quinnipiac University poll showed 48% of Americans approve of the way Obama is handling his job as president, compared to 42% who disapprove. The president also scored low marks from Americans on his handling of the situation in Afghanistan, with just 38% saying they approved of his approach, but a majority didn't say it was the right thing for U.S. troops to be in the country. Majority did say it was the right thing for U.S. troops to be in the country. I misspoke. Even using the terminology that Afghan surge is the right war, again, all still predicated on the lies of 9/11. No, it doesn't have anything to do with fake WMDs and dodgy dossiers and Downing Street memos tied into the Bush, Blair, Cheneyak, neocon 9/11 Iraq war op. This ties into the carpet of gold and carpet of bombs amassing troops near Afghanistan before 9/11 fraud. And we still have all the guys who in the 70s, when we were running our proxy war, funding the Mujahideen, which would of course later turn into Al-Qaeda, the base, the database. Brzezinski, Robert Gates, these guys know how to keep insurgencies going, playing both ends against the middle on the grand chessboard. Don't you see it yet? This speaks to a lot of the cult of personality, I think. From Faux News, another poll says that U.S. likes Obama personally, but not his policies. And as far as the slick Madison Avenue PR guys care, that's all that matters. You don't have to like the policies, because you'll quietly acquiesce to them anyway. As long as they've now put a new, bright, shining face on this tyranny that encroaches with each administration, left or right. I think he's a nice guy. From Press TV out of Iran, 12 million illegal immigrants may gain legal status in the U.S. And the other note from the New York Times, White House plan on immigration includes legal status. Obama administration will insist on measures to give legal status to an estimated 12 million illegal immigrants as it pushes early next year for legislation to overhaul the immigration system, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said last Friday. Isn't it interesting that the Homeland Security Secretary is talking about citizenship and essentially amnesty? This goes back to the event we saw several weeks ago of Representative Wilson shouting, "You lie." That's when Obama was talking about not giving amnesty. I'm not weighing into this whole debate. It's another classic divide and conquer scheme. But it is another example of broken campaign promises. Amnesty International, however, urges Obama to redouble efforts over Guantanamo closure. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. We also note that the top White House lawyer has resigned. We get the first bit from Deutsche Press. U.S. President Barack Obama's top lawyer will resign by the end of the year and return to private practice. Greg Craig served as a White House counsel through Obama's administration's first year, shepherding through the appointment of Sotomayor as the first Hispanic justice on the Supreme Court. The follow-up from this, from Alex Constantine, asks the question, who was Greg Craig? R.E., the Don Siegelman frame-up. News out of Alabama this week indicates that Craig might be more interested in protecting Roe than in seeing that justice is done. This ties into lots of other political, lawyerly maneuvering. And, of course, Karl Rove. The bow debate. Again, so many of these things are sticky, contentious issues because now they all have the specter of race around them. So it even affects the way you can discuss it. Almost, it reminds me in a way similar to that you can't discuss the war crimes of the state of Israel without being called a racist, anti-Semite, or whatever. Obama's deep bow in Japan causes debate. So there is mainstream media reporting on this, again from the Deutsche Press Agency. Obama's deep bow while shaking the hand of Japan's Emperor Akihito has erupted a new wave of debate on the propriety of the act. It goes over to, you know, show George Bush kissing Saudi princes. We also know that Obama bends to Japanese royalty, and it would note that maybe Obama's never met a monarch he didn't like. He bowed before King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia in April. The interesting note, the contrast from Breitbart TV, 46 other world leaders didn't bow to the Japanese emperor. There's a lot of semiotics, body language, and racially loaded debates all within there. But it brings up the specter of who's in charge of who and who's running what and who bows to who. Michael Moore says Democrats' health care bill is a giveaway to the insurance industry, and why should that be any surprise? As we find a lot of our Republican friends are in bed with the military-industrial complex, a lot of our Democrat fake progressive friends are in bed with the insurance, pharma, and money industries. Here is an interesting note and clip of Obama critic Reverend Mannings mentioning a little visit he got recently.
I am James David Manning, pastor of the Otla World Missionary Church in Harlem, Otla, New York. I'm also the host of the daily radio broadcast called The Manning Report. On the 16th of November, 2009, on or about 6 p.m. in the afternoon, two CIA agents claiming to be members of Homeland Security and two New York City detectives came to our church to ask me questions regarding statements I have made about Barack Hussein, the long-legged Mac Daddy, Obama. They drew my attention, the agents did, to a posting on our website called Tea Party Members Go Viral on the Birth Certificate. And in that particular posting, I stated that the long-legged Mac Daddy is invincible by the vote. Not only should you turn your attention to the birth certificate issue, then he becomes outrageously vulnerable. He is indeed an illegal alien and is not qualified to be the U.S. president. But to spend all of my energy and time to overthrow this evil that has entered into our world. As an American patriot, I'm compelled to fight to restore our republic and its constitution. I expect, as a result of the visit last night by the CIA and New York City police detectives, Homeland Security people, I expect to be arrested in not too many days.
That is a fascinating clip from Reverend James Mannings. And though we're not going to weigh into the birth certificate issue here, as we've noted in the past, it's akin, I believe, to only paying attention to controlled demolition on 9/11. I believe it's a sideshow, corrupted, controlled issue that maybe doesn't get at the heart of what really is going down. Last couple notes on Obamasiah updates. On the other fake side, thousands throng to see Palin as she begins her book tour. And the last note, Keith Olbermann notes the worst person in the world is a GOP state senator casting Obama as a terrorist. Shooting ducks in a barrel, or whatever the saying is. Again, Keith Olbermann used to do good probing work when his favorite party wasn't in power. Now that they are, he's still fighting the same kind of weak battles and isn't using those same expose skills on the Microsoft General Electric network to expose our left cover president. Quickly now, let's get to part three of our coverage of the Fort Hood false flag. Drills, holes, probes, repeat. We'll mention the two original postings, part one, the original post, 13 dead, 31 wounded in mass shooting at Fort Hood. The second week, part two, follow-up, Fort Hood false flag, updates on the oddities of the Hassan case. And we'll start off this part three, third week, third list of updates on this latest, strangest, homegrown errorism terror event with a massive article from Webster Tarpley. We've noted many, many times the great work he's done exposing the patsies, the black networks, the drills, especially in 9/11 Synthetic Terror, his 2005 book. We're just going to hit a little portion of his massive article. It's huge, it's footnoted, it's sourced. Hassan of Fort Hood, a patsy in a drill gone live? At the top of the article, he mentions that the two main talking points are either that he's a crazed Muslim, or that he was just an overworked army guy under psychological strain. The media narrative, which is now being consolidated a week and a half after the shootings, now 2 weeks, 2 weeks and a day after the shootings, is full of contradictions, embarrassed silences, and absurdities. A third and distinct approach to this case is therefore required, one which regards Major Hassan as a manipulated patsy in the context of a relatively sophisticated operation mounted by forces within the intelligence community using methods and assets which by now ought to have become familiar. Major Hassan can be seen as a mixture of Lee Harvey Oswald, legendary 9/11 suicide pilot Muhammad Atta, and Cho Sung-hui, the alleged April 2007 Virginia Tech shooter. He also has elements of reputed RFK assassin Sirhan Sirhan and of John Hinckley Jr., who was involved in an attempt to kill President Reagan, which just happened to be during the drill known as Operation Nine Lives, both of whom survived the operations in which they were implicated. Hassan thus represents a new cocktail of patsy ingredients. Until now, Islamic terrorists had come in collectivist groups and not alone. Hassan, by contrast, is a troubled loner in the tradition of Oswald. At the same time that he embodies the religious fanaticism of Atta, along with some of his peccadillos, you know, like visiting strip clubs, like any good conservative Muslim would do, Hassan is that novelty, a troubled Islamic fundamentalist loner, even though this is something of a contradiction in terms. Like Cho, Hassan emerges from the psychiatric clinic in Blacksburg, Virginia Tech, no less, both of them. In his case, as a practicing psychiatrist, but as a shrink with egregious symptoms of his own. Like all patsies, Hassan combines the flamboyant and bombastic proclamation of his personal creed with a seeming immunity from bureaucratic countermeasures which would normally be automatic in shutting him down. Hassan is revealed as a fanatic, a misfit, a quasi-psychotic or psychotic mental case in his own right who could not subsist without protectors in high places of the U.S. intelligence community. Oswald was always talking about communism and learning Russian, yet he survived through the military, got to go to Russia, and come back somehow, and bring a girl, and have a CIA handler. I can't fully flesh all this out. If the investigation of drills and military exercises and patsies in these kind of black ops is new to you, I again recommend the work of Webster Tarpley. The rest of the updates on Fort Hood False Flag Part 3 from LouRockwell.com. Fort Hood official story is full of holes. OnlineJournal.com. Jerry Mazza asked the question, is Hassan a jihadist or a patsy? Jonathan Turley, again, lawyer, again on Raw Replay, said the shooting was rage, not terrorism. Mazza also notes that the U.S. is dying to prosecute Hassan. That's on OnlineJournal.com. Obama urges Congress to put off Fort Hood probe. That's from the Associated Press. We noted last week, Representative Hoekstra apparently leaking information, say he hasn't gotten any help in the investigation into Fort Hood. We noted that controlled opposition left Rachel Maddow called him out. We, of course, if he were doing it to expose Bush, they'd call him a courageous whistleblower, but not in this case. So look at how the probes are going. Again, there's so many probes now, I can just hit you with the headlines, and we'll still have to sort through all of this. Who's investigating what? Who's being put in charge of the official cover-ups? The problem with the Congressional Fort Hood investigation witness list, that's from Alex Constantine. Of course, it probably won't include any of the tons of witnesses in the beginning who all said there were three shooters. Remember, in the beginning, it was always three shooters, two captured, one was dead. Then in the end, oh, it was one guy, he's alive, and he was by himself. In Fort Hood aftermath, Pentagon opens two reviews. That's from the Washington Post from yesterday. U.S. military base slayings prompt Pentagon review from the Washington Times. Pentagon to investigate mental health. That's from the Telegraph. The Washington Post notes that Hassan's ties to a radical imam raise questions of self-radicalization. Fort Hood suspects contact with Yemeni cleric disturbing. That's from the Deutsche Press agency. Fort Hood hearing focuses on homegrown threats. That's from the Capitol Briefing blog on Washington Post. Again, homegrown threats. Lawmakers seek more help from administration for Fort Hood investigations. Hassan's supervisor warned the Army in 2007. Strange case noted by editorandpublisher.com of a threat to repeat Fort Hood at a Michigan newspaper have been investigated. Apparently some woman said, you know, don't make me go Fort Hood on you. Copycat effect, clustering. Noted many, many times the mass murder, mayhem, contagion. And the most recent update from this morning, November 20th, 2009, from CNN, military denies hiding report after Fort Hood killings. That should whet your appetite and let you know that, again, I'm not the guy, kind of guy that says everything's a conspiracy, but certain events happen, and again, as you study this longer, you'll start to smell a rat pretty quickly, and the Fort Hood case stinks to high heaven. Tons of military folks who have worked at Fort Hood for a long time have all said there's no way one guy did this with the weapons you say he did. But again, the original story was three guys, combat fatigues, military-style weapons. Now the official story is one guy, handgun-style weapons. He would have had to have reloaded with as many shots as he was reported to have fired. Someone probably would have tried to drop him at that point. And I guess no cameras. This shifts perfectly as they're shifting the apparatus against dissenters. Police State International, drills, desensitization, and hoaxes. Gun sales shoot up amid fear of rising crime and terrorism. That's the UK Times Online talking about our situation here in the States. Chicago Tribune asks if Illinois could be the next Gitmo. You have a lot of towns with empty multi-million dollar prisons that are just begging to house suspected enemy combatants in the war of terror. As the fake economy collapses, the only jobs will be working for the state, locking up your fellow man for suspected thought crimes. Schwarzenegger aims to transfer Iraq military tactics to California. That's from the Times Online. U.S. military employs counterinsurgency strategy in Californian city. That's from InfoWars. With more reporting from the OC Register, California teens help SWAT team practice. It's all normalizing the military performing law enforcement duties. That's against something we used to call posse comitatus. Vigilant Guard, military exercises still rage on. National Guard exercise in the Buffalo region now going on. Rhode Island emergency workers train at mock terrorist site. DNA of UK protesters could be held for life. That's from the Telegraph. Ottawa soldiers could get uniforms for urban jungle. We've noted the urban warfare drills, black helicopters over Denver, New Orleans, Portland, New York. They're training to take over our cities, and now they're going to get uniforms so they can blend in, I suppose, with the cityscape. The last note on this Police State International posting of drills, desensitization, and hoaxes is an interesting story I haven't fully fleshed out, but again, it sure stinks on first smell. This was brought to my attention by way of CorruptionAmericanStyle.blogspot.com, where questions remain as gunmen go missing in the bizarre Florida false hostage operation.
Right now, a manhunt is on for two gunmen who took store employees hostage at a TJ Maxx in the state of Florida, south of Sarasota, town of Venice. Two armed men entering the store as employees were getting ready to close up last night at 9 o'clock. This is the SWAT team moving in later. At least eight employees were trapped inside with the gunmen for a number of hours. SWAT team comes in. Here's part of the dramatic ordeal that we're now hearing from eyewitnesses there.
Apparently, they either got away and ran out the front door or got released, one of the two. I'm not for sure yet.
And what did they do when they came out of the front door?
They were screaming, and there was a nervous wreck, and they were tied up, and the police told them to raise their hands, and they could obviously, because their hands were bound tied.
Captain Tom McNulty of the Venice Police Department joins me now live. Good morning, Captain.
Good morning.
Okay, so these armed and masked men held eight employees hostage for more than 3 hours. What was going on during that time?
Well, initially, when we got the call, it was at closing time. When the two suspects came in front door of the TJ Maxx, several of the employees inside saw that, knew that there was a robbery taking place, and they ran out the back, and they were able to call us. There were actually four employees inside and two shoppers. The suspects tied up several of them, and in the confusion, they were able to get out before we arrived on scene.
What were these armed men demanding?
At this time, they weren't demanding anything. We think they were going for money, and they were going to try to locate the safe. But because several of the employees were able to call us and get away from them, it would be a botched robbery.
Again, without knowing too much about this, I'm going to speculate and say that this whole thing stinks of some kind of drill, some kind of PR stunt, some kind of false flag. Moving quickly to the geopolitics post, Bilderberg, false flags and war crimes. First, we note a video with a write-up from InfoWars. The video is subtitled because in it, an Italian MP denounces the Bilderberg influence on the European Union, noting, of course, the secret meetings that the oligarchs who decide our future meet privately once a year, once in Europe, then in the States. Them, along with the Committee of 300 and the Club of Rome, what essentially some folks would call the Illuminati. I just like to think of them as multi-generational serial killers. Inbred elites. Italian MP denounces the Bilderberg influence on the European Union. We'll have a nice follow-up at the end of this geopolitics post where quickly we also note order out of chaos, CIA and Blackwater actually responsible for the bombings and assassinations in Pakistan. U.S. aid officer arrested with the terrorists in Islamabad. That's from Alex Constantine. Australia mulls Scientology probe. That's from BBC. The U.S. moves to seize properties tied to Iran. I did have a clip for that. We're going to skip it because we're running low on time. But again, it's all there for you. All the audio, all the documentation, all the video, it's all there for you. Two arrested in Chicago may have links to Mumbai attack. And the last note is a quick little six-minute clip called I Am Israel. Contentious notes, but again, this all touches on false flags and black ops and war crimes and secret societies, not conspiracy theories. The update. We now know that Belgium Prime Minister Van Rompuy, R-O-M-P-U-Y, has now been named the new European Union president. He is, of course, a Bilderberg member. You remember the Italian MP who recently denounced the Bilderberg influence on EU? Well, I guess he's not so crazy after all. And the war machine rages on. The latest war horrors headlines, failure, funding, and finding. Global warfare, USA. The world is the Pentagon's oyster. That's from globalresearch.ca. Army sends infant to protective services, mom to Afghanistan. That's from commondreams.org, and The Guardian fleshes it out more, where the U.S. Army arrested a mom who failed to turn up for Afghanistan deployment. 21-year-old single mother. Kid now goes to foster care, where they're way more likely to be abused. And the mom's been arrested. Mission accomplished. Army suicide set another yearly record. That's from CNN. NATO chief notes that a quick exit from Afghanistan will unleash global jihad. Same folks who said it'll be a bloodbath if we leave are the ones who said it'll be a cakewalk to go in. More on how the U.S. funds the Taliban from The Nation. U.S. unveils extended Bagram prison. Again, we ain't going anywhere. That's from Al Jazeera. High cost weighs on troop debate for Afghan war. That's from The New York Times. DARPA mad scientists and their liquid laser gunship program pushes ahead. And also from Danger Room, Israelis want a pain ray of their own. ABC News found the location of another secret CIA torture prison. Top U.S. officer says we may have to reconsider Iraq drawdown plan. Again, we ain't going anywhere. Former presidential GOP candidate and actor Fred Thompson says that the Afghanistan war is already lost. In a nod to global warming, Navy preps for ice-free Arctic. And the last note is a clip from, again, Raw Replay, where they note that the Afghan surge may leave no brigades in reserve. For here, in the States. It all ties in. Everything ties in. Each story seems to connect to the other in an amazing way. We've got a long, ugly blast of all the EconoCrash updates. Another day, another dollar. The first report from the French agency press, U.S. national debt now tops $12 trillion for the first time in U.S. history. They announced it Tuesday. Treasury data showed Monday's outstanding debt at $12.031 trillion. The ballooning debt reflects the massive deficit spending by the government in an effort to revive an ailing economy over more than 1 year. The public debt topped $10 trillion in September 2008. At least the public beginning of the end of the beginning of the new financial world order, the controlled demolition of the economy, pulling the rug out from under us, all a part of the plan. The banksters and George Soros and all those guys say, I'm having a very good crisis. This is the culmination of my life's work. Our mission has been to deindustrialize the United States and destroy the middle class. We moved out all your industries. You don't make anything. You don't export anything. But paper and promises. And, of course, the seemingly unstoppable war machine. However, as folks like Ron Paul and many others have noted, you're going to run out of money to run the war machine. China may not keep subsidizing our war of terror. China, of course, being the model nation in the United Nations. The ballooning debt reflects the massive deficit spending by the government in an effort to revive an ailing economy. You gotta spend money to make money, baby. The debt is quickly approaching the statutory limit of $12.104 trillion, meaning Congress would have to either raise the ceiling or we would have a shutdown of government operations. More on that story from CBS. We also note the trade deficit in U.S. increases by most since 1999. That's from Bloomberg. Commodity rally drives mining stocks higher as dollar drops. That's also from Bloomberg. A note from Raw Story and a note from here in Oregon. Oregon's DeFazio says that we should, quite correctly, fire Geithner and Summers.
Congressman Peterson, Peter DeFazio of Oregon is with us on that issue tonight. Congressman, good to have you on.
Thanks, Ed.
What kind of progress can be made to make sure that TARP money goes where it's really going to stimulate the economy, small business, and infrastructure?
Well, that's our money. It was borrowed in the name of the American people. It was borrowed to bail out Wall Street, which has worked famously for Goldman Sachs and others. We think it's time maybe that we turn our focus to Main Street. We reclaim the unspent funds, reclaim some of the funds that are being paid back, which will not be paid back in full. And we use it to put people back to work. Rebuilding America's infrastructure is a tried and true way to put people back to work. Unfortunately, the president has an advisor from Wall Street, Larry Summers, and a Treasury Secretary from Wall Street, Timmy Geithner, who don't like that idea. They want to keep the TARP money either to continue to bail out Wall Street if there are future problems or maybe...
Geithner does not want to give the money to small business, the TARP money.
No, they're saying they gotta keep the money. There may be more needs on Wall Street, or maybe they should use it to pay down the deficit. That's absurd. We borrowed the money. How do you pay down the deficit?
Should he stay in his job, Congressman?
No.
You think Tim Geithner should be gone as Treasury Secretary?
I do, especially if you look back at the AIG scandal and Goldman and the others who got their bets paid off in full. Instead of saying, well, you bet, you lost. Yeah. They got paid back in full with taxpayer money through AIG. We channeled the money through them. Geithner would not answer my question when I said, were those naked credit default swaps by Goldman or were they a counterparty? He said, I will not answer that question. I think they were naked credit default swaps. They were bets. They should not have gotten their money back.
So he's not coming clean with the Congress?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so have you asked the Obama administration to remove him or will you?
The Populist Caucus is considering questions regarding both him and some other members of the economic team in the near future.
Okay, so there's been talk in the halls of Congress among some progressive Democrats that maybe it's time to ask the Obama administration to remove Tim Geithner. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, he's being failed by his economic team. Their total orientation is Wall Street, not Main Street, not real jobs. I mean, okay, let's get past all the Goldman bailout and all that stuff. I've got firms in my district that are solvent, very little debt, and they can't get money out of bailout
firms like
Wells Fargo.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Well, what was this announcement a few weeks ago that they were going to get money to the community banks? Where the hell is that?
Good question. I can't tell you. It's
okay, so the Obama, they made an announcement that they were going to get this TARP money to community banks, but you don't know where that is right now.
Nope, we're still waiting. There's no new lending to my small businesses in my communities.
And how many congressmen in the House do you think would go along with Geithner's removal?
Well, when you mention either Geithner or Larry Summers, as they were mentioned in the Democratic caucus on jobs on Monday night, there are boos and cries of derision. I think there's a growing consensus in the caucus. We need a new economic team that cares about more about jobs, Main Street, and the American people than it does about Wall Street and huge bonuses.
I tell you what, Congressman, this job summit thing that's coming up in the White House in December, it's like the Super Bowl of the economy, or at least a major playoff game. That's how I see it.
Well, we may have to sacrifice just two more jobs to get millions back for Americans.
I hear you.
So that's Oregon Rep. Peter DeFazio talking about firing Geithner and Summers, and they don't even mention Obama's financial advisor from Skull and Bones, Austin Goolsbee. But further down the econo-crash list, six congressmen demand complete audit of Fed over the AIG counterparty fiasco that was just referenced in that clip. We have an interesting note, as we're going to mention Walmart, but we'll also mention IKEA. There's a new book called The Truth About IKEA that, according to The Independent, packs quite a punch, and it goes over how the company is hostile to foreign employees and also uses Stasi-like secret police methods to spy on its staff worldwide. Walmart takes steps to prevent more Black Friday chaos and tragedy. That's from Consumerist. An update on that in just a moment. The New York Times notes that the Senate health bill is said to cost over $849 billion over 10 years. The derivatives legislation was probably written by J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs. That's from Washington's blog. Bank of America, UBS, and J.P. Morgan are being sued over derivatives. This from Bloomberg. They're being sued by a California public utility. Lehman Brothers sues Barclays for $5 billion plus damages. It would be nice if we could just see all these vultures all turn on each other and destroy themselves. Money stunt causes chaos in Paris. At least one central bank held fake gold. We made recent notes on recent episodes. The speculation of essentially fake tungsten gold bars. More nations buying gold from the IMF by the ton. We also have another clip, another interview, Gerald Celente on KingWorldNews.com, talking about how the U.S. is losing everything to fascist oligarchs. The update from Consumerist on Walmart's Black Friday plan is cheap TVs and iPod Touch with a $50 gift card. Jobs saved or created in congressional districts that don't exist. Remember all those job creations and savings? Obama Sai has been touting. ABC News discovered some of the districts don't exist. A new tale of Detroit's woe. The Pontiac Silverdome, which cost some $55 million, I believe, was sold for $583,000. 32% tuition increase at UCLA causes near riots. I believe some of that is still popping up on Google News right now. And there are videos to go along with that. Ron Paul's amendment to audit the Federal Reserve has been approved. That's from StreetInsider.com. But as we noted again this morning, November 20th, Ron Paul's bittersweet symphony. Yes, the audit the Fed bill has been approved, but it has essentially been defanged the last I have read up on it. The last note, and that ties it up, because this is, again, what DeFazio was talking about. Geithner savaged on unemployment during a fiery Capitol Hill hearing. More on that and some of the great videos and some of the great confrontations there from InfoWars. The last two notes on this 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com are going to center on my two main states, West Virginia and Oregon. I lived in West Virginia, born and raised, 28 years. I was the music and program director at a 950-watt non-commercial radio station back east, WSHC, for several years. Did a lot of sound design. And essentially, when I moved to Oregon 4 years ago, I took my radio programming, sound design know-how, and I put it to use for alternative news politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, creating what you are listening to right now, the Media Monarchy Radio Show. So now that that little backstory's out of the way, we're going to start in Portland, Oregon. This story went around the world and got a lot of attention. There's some debate about what is the first and where was the first, and that it may not actually be us. But we've got reports from HighTimes.com, The Oregonian, Raw Story, flashback links from MediaMonarchy.com, but it will get the original report from Reuters. The first U.S. marijuana cafe opens up in Portland, Oregon. The United States' first marijuana cafe opened last Friday, the 13th, posing an early test of the Obama administration's move to relax policing of medical use of the drug. The flashback to October on MediaMonarchy.com, feds to issue new medical marijuana guidelines. The Cannabis Cafe in Portland, Oregon, is the first to give certified medical marijuana users a place to get hold of the drug and smoke it, as long as they're out of public view and despite a federal ban. This club represents personal freedom, finally, for our members, said Madeline Martinez, Oregon's executive director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML.org. She also said, the plans go beyond serving food and marijuana. We hope to have classes, seminars, even a cannabis community college based here to help people learn about growing and other uses for cannabis. We've mentioned the cannabis college in Oregon, I believe, a few weeks ago. The cafe, in a two-story building which formerly housed a speakeasy and adult erotic club called Rump Spankers, is technically a private club, but is open to any Oregon residents who are normal members and hold an official medical marijuana card. Now, I swiped the video from The Oregonian and posted it up to youtube.com/Media Monarchy on the first U.S. marijuana cafe opening up right here in Portland, Oregon.
New members right, old members left.
New over.
Yeah, because you have to be a normal member.
Wait, new, so if you don't have members here,
normal part, you have to use it just for those guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Narcotics just get you hooked. Marijuana helps you live a life that you can continue to be somewhat productive.
We are a huge segment of society, and we have no place of our own. Medical marijuana cardholders, we are virtually ostracized from society. We're not giving large amounts for them to take off the premises. We're just affording them a sample and a volcano, a vaporizer to use.
I think that would qualify as what the late, great Bill Hicks would call a positive drug story. I'll reiterate something I've said many, many times here. There aren't too many simple fixes for the problems we face. However, the industrial cultivation of hemp and its use for food, fuel, and textiles and it's also interesting to note, and again, I feel a little validated. I think we kind of called this. So again, longtime listeners, you will concur that for a long time here on MediaMonarchy.com, we've been noting that Obama ain't going to end the Patriot Act. He's not going to end the wars of aggression. He's still accelerating the new financial world order and all of those things, and that agenda that rolls forward. However, as a little steam valve release so that people don't completely wig out, they might back off on the marijuana drug war so that at least, you know, if we're not, you know, becoming self-sufficient and growing hemp, we'll at least be comfortably high as the doo-doo hits the oscillator. finally, my friends, on this 150th episode, we're going to go all the way back home to my home state of West Virginia. And again, not something that I'm coming down on one side or the other, that I'm necessarily praising this institution or this organization or this person. Again, so much of what we do is data mining, doing the investigation, pointing things out. And as a born and bred West Virginian, it's a state that takes a lot of beatings, and I have to kind of find myself defending it. So when something historical and interesting happens, it's definitely, I think, worth noting and pointing out positives to folks about wild, wonderful, almost heaven West Virginia. Just a few days ago, November 18th, Wednesday, 2009, West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd became the longest-serving congressman in United States history. Senator Robert Byrd, Democrat from West Virginia, made a rare appearance on the floor of the U.S. Senate on Wednesday to mark his 20,774th day as a member of Congress, making him the longest-serving member in history. Byrd, whose birthday is today, sharing a birthday with Vice President Biden, Robert Byrd, turning 92 today on November 20th, is known for his command of arcane Senate rules and his ability to steer federal dollars to his home state. And anyone from the state can point that out. My old college now has many buildings. That's the Byrd Center for this and the Byrd building of that. But let's listen to a quick clip of Robert Byrd being honored in the Senate Wednesday for becoming the longest-serving congressman in U.S. history.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Senate recognizes and commends Robert C. Byrd, Senator from West Virginia, for his 56 years of exemplary service in the Congress of the United States.
Madam President.
Without objection, the Senate will proceed to the measure. Senator from West Virginia.
Madam President, I ask unanimous consent that the resolution and preamble be agreed to en bloc, and the motions to reconsider be laid upon the table en bloc. Further, that any statements delivered earlier today with respect to Senator Byrd appear at the appropriate place in the record as if read.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, so ordered.
President, I've sat here, and I know he's about to speak, and I'm not going to interfere with that, but I've sat here in this role for years with my dear friend from West Virginia, and we've been friends for the 35 years I've served here. In his mind, I'm but a junior member of the Senate. I haven't been here only 35 years, but they've been especially good ones because he's here. And I'll say something further later on, but I yield the floor.
Madam President.
Just very distinguished Senator from West Virginia.
I thank the chair. Thank you, Pat. I thank Senator Reed, my leader. I thank Senator McConnell. And I thank my colleague and dear friend, Senator Jay Rockefeller. And all senators, everyone, for their good words and for this outstanding resolution. Today, Madam President, is much more than a commemoration of the length of service of one U.S. senator. Today also celebrates the great people of the great and mighty state. Of West Virginia, who honored me by repeatedly placing their faith in me.
Now, not getting into, and I pretty much know which side I come down on this, is not exactly saying having 92-year-old guys in Congress is the greatest idea in the world. Hopefully, perhaps, Robert Byrd, now setting this record for West Virginia, can kind of be a headstone, a guidestone, if you will, and he can be the last guy to ever do something like this, because I think, essentially, we need newer, fresher, non-career-minded blood in the halls of government. So without weighing into any of that debate, without getting into, he was in the Ku Klux Klan 50 years ago, and he did call it the most egregious mistake he's ever made in his life. He voted against the Civil Rights Act, but then later became more of a mainline Democrat, showing that he was able to change through the years. Without getting into any of that kind of garbage, we're going to close out this 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com with an amazing flashback clip of Senator Robert Byrd in the run-up to the war in Iraq, based on lies, built on the blank check of 9/11. Very few people spoke out against it. Senator Robert Byrd was one of those folks. Let's take the last few minutes and listen to the last few minutes of Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia's speech on March 19th, 2003, in the run-up to the Iraq War.
How long will we be in Iraq? What will be the cost? What is the ultimate mission? How great is the danger here at home? A pall has fallen over the Senate chamber. We avoid our solemn duty to debate the one topic on the minds of all Americans, even while scores of thousands of our sons and daughters faithfully do their duty in Iraq. What is happening to this country, my country, your country, our country? When did we become a nation that ignores and berates our friend? And calls them irrelevant? When did we decide to risk undermining international order by adopting a radical and doctrinaire approach to using our awesome military might? How can we abandon diplomatic efforts when the turmoil in the world cries out? For diplomacy. Why can this president not seem to see that America's true power lies not in its will to intimidate, but in its ability to inspire? War appears inevitable, but I continue to hope that the cloud will lift. Perhaps Saddam will yet turn tail and run. Perhaps reason will somehow still prevail. I, along with millions, scores of millions of Americans will pray for the safety of our troops, for the innocent civilians, women, children, babies, old
and young, crippled, deformed, sick in Iraq. And for the security of our homeland. May God continue to bless the United States of America in the troubled days ahead. And may we somehow recapture the vision which for the present eludes us. Madam President, I yield the floor and suggest the absence of a quorum.
Clerk will call the roll. Expressions of approval or disapproval are not permitted.
But they are here, and we approve. Troubling times indeed. That's Robert Byrd speaking before the beginning of Shock and Awe, and I think that's a fitting way to bring an end to this 150th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's November 20th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Something we do at the end of every episode is take a look at some of the interesting visitors that have been checking out MediaMonarchy.com, watching them through StatCounter.com. We had the Federal Trade Commission at a DC Google Falcon Virgo, that being a military drill. The Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola, reading about the Fort Hood Hassan oddities. Chrysler out of Waco, Texas. The U.S. Senate Sergeant-at-Arms. Hasbro out of Rhode Island. NBC Universal out of California. The DOD Network Information Center. The American Red Cross. The Navy Network Information Center. U.S. Courts out of Washington, D.C. USCourts.gov googled Media Monarchy. The Pepsi Cola Company. And finally, the United States Postal Service. Those are just some of last week's creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com. And again, all I can say is that this 150th episode kind of snuck up on me. Weeks and months ago, I had fantasies about an amazing big episode, but I think I just tried to deliver another classic, hard-hitting, jam-packed episode filled with more news and alternative news and politics than you're going to find on any other alternative news show. So I thank you guys, and we'll continue to do this. The last note here, a programming note. Going to be taking off the rest of the year from the live shows on Friday mornings. Thought a lot about it, and I need the break. I need to do the work at my jobby job. I also need to travel, and also need to just have some time with myself and my friends and family. So no live shows on Friday. However, I will continue through the rest of the year to make B-side episodes, possible musical mixtape episodes, more interviews coming very soon, and of course, weekly episodes with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com of our new video series, The New World, next week. My friends, again, I can't thank you enough for making all this possible. The way we end every show is the way I'll end this 150th episode. Again, this isn't a monologue. It needs to be a dialogue between everyone. My friends, I want you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.